Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hello, America. I'm Robert Rees, and welcome to CEO Show. We're here today with Greg Alexander. How are you, Greg?
I'm well, Robert. How are you today?
Very well, and better to since I'm with you. Greg has some insights, and these are truly disruptive that you probably never heard before. And this is after like 1,000 CEOs, so it's rare for me to say that. But let's first talk about Sales Benchmark Index, which is a company that you built that was very differently, wildly successful. You sold in 10 years. After that, we're going to talk about Collective 54 and then the Lumini Network. So if you could first just give a sentence of what each of those are, and then we'll dig down deeper into SBI.
Okay, very good. So Sales Benchmark Index, or we're most commonly referred to as SBI, was a management consulting company that specialized in business-to-business sales effectiveness. And as you stated, I started that in 2006 and sold it in 2017. Collective 54 is a membership organization for founders of professional services firms, and I funded that in 2020. And then Lumini Network is also a membership organization, but it's focused on the 7 million executive assistants in the world and the impact that they can have on the CEO's productivity. And that was funded in 2021.
And just if you look at everyone, how Greg is thinking, when you want to disrupt an industry, you want to find an angle where no one else is. And this is the first time I've ever heard of having a specific organization for arguably the key person for all the CEOs, which is you, the executive assistant. But let's start with SBI, Sales Benchmark Index. You grew the company where your average salesperson brought in over $1 million a year. Talk about what you did.
Yeah, so SBI, we specialize in business-to-business sales effectiveness. So what does that mean? So think of large corporations that have thousands of salespeople on the street. It's a big expense, and obviously nothing happens until somebody sells something. So any productivity gain you can get from your sales force there has a huge impact on a company's net income statement. So the name, Sales Benchmark Index, is a mouthful, and it's a mouthful for a reason. What we did was is we applied the science of benchmarking to the art of sales. And this was way back in 2006 where this was a new thing. Data-driven decision-making, artificial intelligence, data analytics, whatever term you want to use for it. But using data as a way to make intelligent sales decisions is what we pioneered. And it was typically deployed in departments inside of corporations like procurement, finance, supply chain, etc. And our uniqueness was its application to the sales function. And that's what created value for our clients.
What's an example? It sounds really compelling that you're able to use benchmarking for sales in a disruptive way that no one has.
So an example would be very often people have to figure out how to deploy their sales team. So how many sales reps do I need and how should I organize them into things such as sales territories? So, for example, an organization might have a market in New York City, and they might have a market in Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, let's say, as a contrast. And the revenue potential or the opportunity for a salesperson in New York City, obviously, is greater, given the concentration of companies up there, versus in, let's say, Mobile, Alabama. So we would help a organization understand, should they even deploy salespeople in Alabama, or should they deploy five people in New York City, as an example? Or what about Kansas City or Louisville, Kentucky, or Los Angeles or San Francisco? So if I have 1,000 salespeople, where should I deploy them and why? And the way you answer that question is you do bottoms-up data analytics to say, okay, so what is the revenue and profit potential in each market, in each account, and therefore how many salespeople should I deploy accordingly? And when we did the same type of analytics across a number of areas, such as what type of salespeople should we hire and why? How should we compensate them? How should we incent them? How should we train them?
Give an example of a company you worked with. What happened? What was the before? What did you do? And what was the after?
I'll give an example. Let's see here. So Ryder Logistics, a large trucking company in Miami, as an example. What they realized in their customer base is that they had a lot of concentration. So there were a few accounts, let's say, that contributed a tremendous amount of revenue. But yet they were treating those accounts in a similar way that they were treating an average account that might produce much less revenue. So we worked with them to understand who those accounts were, and we built a key account program, and we over-invested in those accounts to make sure that they knew how important they were to Ryder Corporation. And because of that investment, they increased their market share with each one of those accounts quite a bit.
This is Robert Greece on the CEO Show, where we speak with the CEOs who have reinvented the fabric of America. We're here today with Greg Alexander, and we're talking about SBI, a company that was wildly successful. He sold. And now we're going to talk about Collective 54, which really is the next step of this and why you funded it. And it's interesting, the name that I understand, that's the SIC code, correct, of professional services. And so talk about, you know, here you are, like many people, you sell your company, you could retire, but you went from success, in a sense, to significance.
Yeah, so here's what happened to me. So I sold the firm in 2017. I was only 47 years old. And I thought I was done, and I thought it was my finish line, so to speak. And what I realized over time, it was really a stepping stone. What ended up happening was, to sell a consulting firm, which is what SBI was, is a rare thing. I didn't know it at the time, but it's often something that is very difficult to do. The reason for that is that professional services firms, whether they're accounting firms, law firms, consulting firms, marketing agencies, IT service providers, anybody who sells and delivers their expertise on some version of the billable hour, in the financial world, they're perceived to be organizations that can't be bought or sold because they don't have any assets. You know, the phrase inside that industry is all your assets walk out the front door every day on 2 feet because they're people assets. So they're tough to sell. Well, we didn't have that problem. I mean, in a 10-year time period, we started, scaled, and sold the firm, and it was the largest exit of its kind in the history of the sales consulting industry. So while I was in retirement, so to speak, traveling around the world with my wife, the fabulous Brooke, people that I knew would call me up and say, "Hey, Greg, how the heck did you do that?" And I started getting this call very frequently, and many people would say, "Hey, come sit on our board, or would you do a consulting project and teach us how you did what you did?" And given the fact that I had spent 10 years of my life in the consulting business, I just wasn't interested in going back into that business. So I said to myself, how can I make the biggest impact with the biggest amount of people? So I stumbled on the membership business model, and this is the business model that I am investing in right now. And the membership business model is probably worth me describing this a bit. It's very different than the previous business models I was associated in, different in the following ways. So there's really three big business models out there. If you're a product company, you manufacture a product, and you sell it to a customer. And they're buying the product and the utility of the product. And that's a certain relationship between the customer and the manufacturer. In the services business, you don't have a customer, you have a client. And the client is hiring you to perform a service. And that's a certain type of relationship between client and service provider. The third business model is the membership business model, which is the one that I'm passionate about now and why I'm here talking to your audience today. And that is, you don't have a customer, you don't have a client, you have a member. And the relationship between a member and the membership is a peer-to-peer relationship. So our job at Collective 54 and Lumini Network, which we'll talk in more detail later on, is to curate the network. So we're building a network of highly curated, qualified people, a peer network. And we facilitate through programming and connections, peer-to-peer interaction. So the service or the product, so to speak, is not delivered by us. It's delivered member-to-member, peer-to-peer. And there's great examples of these organizations out there that your audience might be familiar with. I'll name a few just to help explain this. So there's YPO, or the Young Presidents Organization, EO, or the Entrepreneurs Organization. There's a company called Vistage that's been around for 75 years. There's an organization called Tiger 21 that specializes in high net worth individuals. There's a company called World 50 that builds communities in large corporations. And that's the business model that we're after. Now, the application of that business model is where things get interesting. And we've applied it twice, once to the professional services industry in Collective 54. And we've applied it a second time in Lumini Network around a job function, in that particular case, the executive assistant. And our plan over the next 10 years is to build about a dozen of these. Over time, in a portfolio of these membership organizations. And I think that's the way that we can make the biggest impact.
The big question to you, a guy who's nonstop working, How do you handle work-life balance?
You know, it's a great question, Robin, and I'm going to steal from some of your previous guests. I think the better term is work-life integration. So let's talk about what we're doing right now. So I live in Dallas, Texas, and in July, which is the time of this recording, Dallas, Texas is about 100 degrees, and it's miserable if you're there. So we escaped to the mountains. So here I am. It's the 4th of July week. I'm with my family up here in beautiful Telluride, Colorado. And we're doing an interview, right? So I'm working work into my life. I've integrated my life and my work. And in these days with the global connectivity and 5G, et cetera, it's easy to do. And if you love what you do, I don't think the two have to be separated. I'm enjoying my time with you. And then when this interview is done, I'm going to go on a hike at about 9,500 feet, and I'm going to enjoy that. And I'm going to come home tonight, and I got a little bit more work to do when everybody goes to bed. So I'm not a believer in the separation of the two. I'm a converted believer in the integration of the two being work and life.
This is Robert Reese. We're speaking with Greg Alexander. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that you mentioned in Lumini, which is the executive assistant and the role that they could play and how they can dramatically increase your business. Back in a few.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.
Hey, Jimmy, turn off the video games. Let's go play some ball.
I'm in the middle
off my game. Can't we go later?
Come on, it'll be fun. It will be there when you get back.
Okay, but there's no way you're gonna win.
Why don't you grab some water and granola bars, and then we'll see about that.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
Hi, this is Robert Greece on the CEO Show. We speak with the CEOs who've reinvented the fabric of America. We're here today with Greg Alexander. And right now, we've been talking about Collective 54. And I want to shift over into Lumini Network, because this is something, talk about a disruption to an industry or a competitive positioning. I've never heard of a model like this. Explain how that model works and why it's so important.
Sure. So Lumini Network is a membership organization for executive assistants who support the CEO. I'll share some numbers with you that might catch you by surprise. So there's 7 million executive assistants just in the United States. And the executive assistant is very often the right hand of the CEO. And he or she can have a big impact on the CEO's productivity. And yet, if you think about how the CEO invests in the professional development of his other direct reports, you know, maybe he sends his marketing leader to get his or her MBA, or maybe he invests in a trade association for the human resources officer or what have you. The CEO is always developing his team, his executive leadership team. Well, a member of that team is the executive assistant. The CEO does not invest in the professional development of the executive assistant. I think it was just something that unfolded the way that it did over time. You know, executive assistants used to be called secretaries. Now they're called executive assistants because of the how the role has increased in its importance. So when we make the CEO aware that he needs to invest in the executive assistant, it's almost like an aha moment. And he says, my gosh, you're right. I just never thought about it. So we built Lumini Network for the exclusive purpose of developing the best executive assistants in the world. And the CEOs that enroll their EAs into that organization receive a tremendous impact and productivity. And that's the big win for the CEO, is teaching the CEO how to leverage this critical resource known as the executive assistant.
What are some of those increases in productivity?
I'll give an example, and I'm going to cite a study here done by Harvard University, published in the Harvard Business Review. So they did the largest time study of CEOs in the history of time studies, believe it or not, and they published this material a few years back in HBR. And they found that 72% of a CEO's time is spent in meetings, which makes sense if you think about it. About half of those meetings, as the survey respondents reported, were a waste of time. Well, who controls the CEO's calendar? Most often, it's the executive assistant. She's the gatekeeper. She determines who gets on the calendar. So, for example, here's a quick hack for your audience. Lumini Network executive assistants have defaulted to a 30-minute meeting, as opposed to a 60-minute meeting. You would think that that would reduce the quality of the meeting, but quite the contrary has happened. The meeting time got cut in half, which brought back hours and hours and hours of time for the CEO. But the quality of the meeting went up. Now, how can that happen? Here's how that can happen. Well, if you only have 30 minutes, you got to get to it. If you only have 30 minutes, you got to have an agenda. You have to have a meeting objective. There's only a certain amount of people that are allowed in the meeting. There's very clear follow-up action items that happen as a result of the meeting. So that's one example of a highly empowered, well-trained executive assistant doing something simple. Like instead of just populating a CEO's calendar with one-hour meetings, she's populating the calendar with 30-minute meetings. And that bought back half of the 72% of time the CEOs are spending in meetings. And there's many, many, many other examples. It's really a wonderful opportunity to increase CEO productivity.
So what other topics you're teaching them? Time management, organization, structure, they're seeing themselves as a CEO. Are you working on sales? Because that's obviously a core expertise.
Well, regarding the executive assistant, it's very specific. So, for example, one of the common complaints the CEOs make these days is they get 300 to 400 emails a day. And they feel as if they can never manage their email inbox down to a zero populated email inbox. Well, guess what? If you're using a proper email management system that the EA runs for the CEO, The CEO stops wasting his time sorting through his email inbox. That's another example. Here's another one. When COVID hit, the communication between the CEO and his or her team and the communication between the CEO and the executive assistant need to be adjusted. I no longer could walk down the office and communicate with my executive leadership team. So there's all these new digital technologies. I mean, we're communicating today over video conference. I'm in here in the Rocky Mountains, and Robert, I don't know where you are, but because of the power of technology, we're having a meeting right now. It's amazing. And there's all these tools that are available now to the executive leadership team. For example, Slack with the messaging thread. How can that be used? What should be done via video conference? What needs to be done face-to-face? These are the types of things that we help the EA and the CEO figure out. How do I leverage these new digital technologies that could significantly improve our productivity? And the EA is at the center of all of that.
That's a really interesting idea. If someone listening in, they want their EA to attend, what is the website they would go to?
And let me spell Lumini because it's somewhat of a nuanced term. LuminiNetwork.com.
And what is the meaning of the name?
That's a great question. You know, the CEO of Lumini Network is a wonderful individual. Her name is Jackie Ludwig. And before she became the CEO of Lumini, before she became the CEO of Lumini, she was the executive assistant supporting the CEO of some world-class organizations, Rolex, Korn Ferry, YPO, etc. So when she came to me with this idea, this passionate executive assistant who wanted to make an impact on these 7 million EAs who she felt have been neglected, I just wrote the check and let her pick the name.
It's a great story, and it's what America is best at, having someone come up with an idea, find the right person who understands structure and has the capital to drive it, and seems like a tremendous success. Talk about the future of Collective 54.
Yeah, so Collective 54 is a rocket ship right now. We're adding about 30 members a month. We've got several hundred and growing. There's 1.5 million professional services firms in the United States. Only 0.25%, roughly 4,116, have reached scale. Scale defined as more than 250 billable employees. So the question we ask ourselves at Collective 54, you know, what is the 0.25% doing that the other 99%+ are not doing? So when the boutiques, as we call them, those with employees less than 250, when they come to Collective 54, that's what they want to figure out. How do I scale my organization? And someday when I'm ready to retire, how do I sell it for a lot of money like Greg did? So we built programming, and we built a methodology that we call the boutique. And members join. They get access to the methodology. They get access to their peer network. And we help them scale their organizations beyond a small little lifestyle business. And that's maybe the key thing. So anyone who's interested in Collective 54, Collective 54 is relevant to you if you want to build a firm beyond a lifestyle business. If you truly want to scale it, and someday you want to sell it, then you should come to Collective 54. So to answer your question regarding what's the future, what we're trying to do is we're trying to disrupt this kind of lazy legacy industry that's got 1.5 million firms in it, but only a very, very small percentage of them have reached their dream. And we're hoping all those proud founders and courageous entrepreneurs who had the guts to start their own business like I did, joins Collective 54, and collectively, we go farther together than we do alone.
I will just ask for the website of Collective 54.
Yep, so it's Collective54, the number 54.com.
Well, Greg, a real pleasure having you on the CEO show, and congratulations on all your disruptive work on reinventing industry.
Thank you, Robert. It was a pleasure being
anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective. We'll be right back.
America, do you want to win the spiritual war against the demons currently attacking our land? Step one comes from the Bible. Lay down the law by resting on the law. And do your resting on our pillowcases printed with His Ten Commandments. Find them at ProjectPillowTalk.com. Don't sleep on this message. Go to ProjectPillowTalk.com or call us at 877-289-7439. When you call, ask to receive another powerful spiritual weapon free. A CD packed with the secrets of forgiveness using all the instruments of praise written in the Bible. Free with your order of our Ten Commandment pillowcases from ProjectPillowTalk.com. Shipping is free too, so call or click 877-289-7439 or ProjectPillowTalk.com. Get your Ten Commandment pillowcases for only $29.95 per set and watch the darkness flee from the light.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
America, I'm Robert Reese, and welcome to CEO Show. We're here today with David Rubenstein. How are you, David?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And David, as you know, is the co-founder and co-chairman of the Carlyle Group. And we've spoken with David previously, as you're aware, but right now is a critical juncture in time. As we are emerging from the pandemic, what's more requisite than anything is leadership. So we're going to talk about his leadership philosophy, risk, competitive positioning, and how we make the world better. So let's start off. David, if you could talk about, if you were through all of your experiences, how would you codify your leadership philosophy?
Well, I guess my philosophy is that if you want to be a leader, you have to lead. And to lead, you have to learn how to communicate with people. You have to get them to follow you. And the best way to get people to follow you is by leading by example. So if you really want to be a great leader, do what you're telling other people to do. If you tell people to do a certain thing after the pandemic, you should be doing it yourself. You also want to inspire confidence in people. People want to be led in most cases, but they want to have confidence in the person that's leading them. So it's very important that you conduct yourself in a way where people will say, I trust this person, I have confidence in this person, I will follow this person.
And that changes or does not change because of the current environment we're in right now?
Well, leadership is the same through the centuries. You have to have certain abilities to inspire people. You have to have the ability to give them confidence. But we have a very difficult situation now. All of us are used to situations where you come back after a vacation, you come back after maybe a summer off or something, but virtually nobody is used to taking more or less a year off or a year and a half off, working remotely, and now coming back to the office. It's a very difficult situation. No answer is perfect. No CEO has a perfect answer. And I think each organization has to come up with what works best for that organization. But I think you have to be a CEO who says, this is what we're going to do. I'm providing leadership. If you want to be part of the team, follow me. You can't say, do whatever you want. Everything that is okay, whatever you want to do is fine with me. That's nice and might sound nice in a party or something. But if you really want to be a leader in business, you have to give people a sense of leadership. You have to tell them, this is what we are going to do. Now, all organizations are now struggling with, do you come back 5 days a week? Do you come back less than 5 days a week? Do you come back no days a week? Do you work remotely for part of the time? How do you keep people engaged in what you're doing? How do you educate people? These are the issues that everybody is struggling with. There's no perfect answer.
When you're looking about that, you're talking about really the new model of connected workforce. And being that no one really knows, and you're saying a leader has to take the front position, how do leaders discern what the best way to move forward in terms of the workforce, the technology, who will work out of the office? Do they let things where people emerge and keep changing? How do you stay, in other words, in the leadership position when you're in unprecedented and uncharted waters?
In this particular case, no one has a perfect answer because we really haven't been through something like this in our lifetimes. But I would say what most CEOs that I'm aware of are doing is they're talking to their senior people. They're also talking to the people that often are the real leaders in the lower part of the organization, the younger people. What do the younger people think is appropriate? What do some of the senior leaders think is appropriate? Talk to them, gauge their views, but then you as the CEO have to come up with the correct decision about what the organization is going to do. Now, you should recognize there is no perfect decision. Whatever you do, somebody will find some fault with it, and whatever you do, you'll realize you could have done something better. But you have to take a position. For example, we've seen that Jamie Dimon has said he wants his people back in the office. We've seen that David Solomon says he wants his people back in the office at Goldman Sachs. Maybe they're making changes on how they normally get people in the office, but people in some cases are saying, I want people back in the office. Other CEOs are saying, if you want to work at home 5 days a week, that's okay if you actually can do the job. And other people are saying, come in 3 days a week, come in 2.5 days a week, whatever you think is appropriate. Whatever the leader thinks is appropriate for his or her organization is what the leader should come back with and say, this is what we're doing. That doesn't mean that it's etched in stone. It's not the Ten Commandments. Maybe after a week or a month or 6 months, people will say, I didn't really do it quite the way I wanted to do it, but here's what we should do to adjust. And so I think the most important thing is take a position, be firm, say what you believe is the right thing to do, and then follow through with that as much as you can.
It reminds me of what Bill Marriott, or Mr. Marriott, once told me, which is decide to decide. So let's move on to the concept of risk. Let's say if Abe Lincoln, who I and many view as the greatest leader of contemporary times, what would he say the greatest risks are in our world right now?
Well, of course, Abraham Lincoln was living in different times. It's hard to know what he would have said today. But I think he was the kind of person who listened to other people and didn't put his ego at stake. He did what he thought was best for the organization, the country, the government, and he tried to not have his ego be the most important thing. So I think whatever you decide to do as the CEO, I think the most important thing is to make it about the organization and not about you. Don't make it what's convenient for you. Don't say, this is what I think we should do because I'm smarter than you, I'm better than you, I know more than you know. Don't tell people how great you are. Let other people tell you how good you are. What you need to do is figure out what makes the most sense for the organization and then provide leadership. People want to be led. We can't have 7.5 billion leaders on the face of the earth. We can have a limited number of leaders. In your own organization, you are the leader. And if you don't lead, you've got to get out of the way because people will want somebody who's a leader. So don't be afraid of making a mistake. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes. Everybody understands mistakes. What people don't want is somebody who isn't leading. That's a bigger mistake, and that's a mistake that's not really forgivable.
Strong point. Let's talk about the markets. A lot of people are talking about inflation. As you look at risk, you have a deep, deep background. What is your sense of the risk in terms of the financial markets, capital markets?
The principal issue the markets are waiting for is figuring out when the Federal Reserve is going to increase interest rates, because interest rates have been artificially low for quite some time. And I think it's going to be a while before the Fed is really ready to increase interest rates. They've given signals that in 2023 they expect to do some interest rate increases, perhaps two. Some people think the Fed will do so sooner. In my own view, I don't think the Fed is going to do anything that quickly, certainly not before the election in 2022. I believe that the Federal Reserve and certainly the administration, to the extent it has influence, does not really want to see interest rates go up before the election, because that's likely to produce a bad effect on the stock market and it will have deleterious effects on the economy, I think most people think. So therefore, I think the administration would view, if they had control over it — they don't control the Fed — but the administration would like to see the problem we've had with the economy get out of the way, have the recovery be complete, have the vaccination process be complete, and then we'll assess the situation. Now, as some of you have heard me say before, when I worked in the White House under President Carter, we had double-digit inflation. So the kind of inflation we're talking about now is nothing compared to what we had then. If you went to college in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s, the standard textbooks would say that inflation that was normal would be 3 or 4% a year. But in the last 10, 15 years, we've become used to inflation that's under 2%. Now that inflation seems to be hovering around maybe 3% for at least a while, that's not so bad in my view. I don't think it's going to have deleterious effects on the economy. Now, if it were to go up from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6% and it was going to stay there, that's a problem for sure. But I think the Federal Reserve's view and my view is that it'll probably hover around 3% and go back to closer to 2% in the next 6 months to 9 months, because we really have artificial things that are making inflation a little bit higher. I think many manufacturers did not correctly anticipate how great consumer spending would be during the period of the pandemic, and therefore they shut down or modified their production capabilities. Now they're ramping up again, they've had to ramp up and therefore pay higher costs to get supplies and so forth. But I don't really think we see an enduring double-digit inflation problem or even a double-digit problem of any type in terms of interest rates or anything like that.
So many people have said right after the pandemic, we went into the roaring 20s. From 1918. Do you see something like that happening with our economic risk, or not really?
The roaring 20s occurred because I think the government was not quite as sophisticated then about inflation, interest rates, and managing the economy. I think the government is much better, so I don't see an out-of-control roaring 20s again. But I do think the economy will do reasonably well for at least another year or so, because I think you have a lot of pent-up demand. People are willing to spend. They're going to come out of their homes and begin spending, traveling, and so forth. And I think while inflation is not going to go to very high levels, it may inch up a little bit where from where it's been over the last decade or so. That's not something I worry about that much. But I do think that the stock market and spending will be reasonably strong. I don't think, though, we're going to see a roaring 20s situation will lead to a Great Depression. I think it was too much out of control in the roaring 20s that led to the Great Depression. I don't see anything like that in the offing.
Well, thank you, David. A pleasure having you on the CEO show.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to breathe in freedom wherever you go? Now you can with the Amulet Shield. Based on space-age technology, the Amulet Shield emits positive ions and surrounds you with a forest-fresh scent wherever you go. Roaming big box stores, riding stuffy elevators, or waiting in long lines, the Amulet Shield hangs around your neck and runs 24 hours when fully charged. Breathe in freedom with the Amulet Shield. Find the Amulet Shield at ProjectPillowTalk.com or call 877-289-7439. No, the Amulet Shield will not kill, cure, or heal anything except fear of not being able to breathe in freedom. So call or click today, ProjectPillowTalk.com or 877-289-7439. That's ProjectPillowTalk.com or 877-289-7439. Breathe in freedom with the Amulet Shield. Currently established federal laws that govern dietary supplements do not allow us to diagnose or treat any medical condition.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day. But supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MacTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. advertise@gcnlive.com.
Hello, America. This is Robert Rees, and we're with David Rubenstein, the co-founder and co-chairman of the Carlyle Group. When you really started the Carlyle Group, there weren't many models. How did you view the positioning at that point in terms of what you were trying to accomplish?
When I started Carlyle with some partners in 1987, the phrase private equity had not even yet been invented. We were known as a buyout shop. And later they became private equity firms and so forth. But the whole idea of building a global private equity firm or a global buyout shop did not exist. I had a vision, which my partners agreed to, that we would build a kind of Fidelity or T. Rowe Price of private equity, which is to say not just do buyouts, but to do many different things in different private investment categories, growth capital, real estate, debt, whatever it might be, and then globalize it. So we'd be a global private investment firm. Obviously, others have done the same. Blackstone, KKR, Apollo are really in the same category doing the same things. So I had a vision of where we wanted to go, which is to be a global, multidisciplined firm. And ultimately, I thought we would take it public, which we did.
From there, what lessons did you learn about how you go into a market?
Well, when you're going into a new market, what we tend to do is to make sure we had local people and local knowledge. We didn't take Yankees and send them to Europe or Asia or Latin America or the Middle East. We would hire local people, but always make certain they were part of a firm. We weren't franchising our name. We made certain they were part of one firm. The most important thing of any organization is its culture. You have to have a certain culture, and that culture has to be one that people buy into and feel that it's a pleasant place to work. You can't really keep great people if they feel it's not a good culture, not a happy culture. You can always pay people a lot of money, and sometimes you can get them to stay. But if the culture is not good, eventually people who are good are going to leave or start their own organization. So culture is the most important thing, making certain you have local knowledge, and also communicating with people all over the world regularly so that they know what you think is very important.
And how about what we've seen from a societal standpoint in terms of bringing harmony to America? We obviously have a great divide politically, racially. What is your take on how CEOs manage that?
Well, you're correct. The country right now is fairly divided. The Congress isn't able to do that much because it's bitterly divided between Democrats and Republicans, but that really reflects the country. We have red states and we have blue states in ways that we didn't 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where a state might go Democratic or Republican in a presidential election. Now you can pretty much predict how 80, 85% of the states are going to go in every presidential election because we become red or we become blue, and it's going to take a while to change that. I think CEOs have to be sensitive to that. I think getting involved in politics is probably generally not a good thing for CEOs to be too actively involved in politics as a general rule of thumb. I think it's better to kind of stay out of politics. That doesn't mean you should be silent, though, on issues like racial harmony or income inequality. I think a CEO has an obligation to speak up on issues that are important to the country, but also important to the customer base, also important to the employee base. You don't want to have an employee base that thinks the CEO is completely insensitive to racial problems in the country or completely insensitive to climate change or other things. Now, how much impact you can have is a different issue, but I think giving voice to some of these concerns in an appropriate way does help the company.
You are coming out with a new book, correct?
I have a new book called The American Experiment, which is about what it means to be an American. What are the unique qualities that have come together to produce this country over the last 230 years or so since the Constitution was ratified? And I also have a new TV show on investing where I talk to the greatest investors in the world about what it means to be a great investor, how they do it, and how people can not necessarily follow them becoming great leaders like they did in the investment world, but also they can get some tips on how they can invest their own money. So, yes, thank you very much for mentioning that.
What is your hope for America and how we will emerge in terms of the fabric of the world?
Clearly, we've suffered a black eye in the eyes of many people around the world following the most recent election. So whatever side you're on, I think you have to recognize that the system we had didn't work perfectly. And therefore, we need to make ways, find ways to make the system work better so people think it's fair and we honor the commitments that the founding fathers had. Their rhetoric was wonderful. Obviously, they didn't live up to the rhetoric and everything they did. But the rhetoric is wonderful of everyone being equal, everybody having certain rights. And we need to do more than we have done to make certain that system really comes to be.
If you were thinking from the Constitution of any one article that codifies where we need to be as a nation, what would that be?
Well, in the Constitution, there are many important things, but I think the most important part of the Constitution probably is the Bill of Rights. It wasn't part of the Constitution initially, but I think it gives us protections and freedoms that I think are essential. And interestingly, in a survey that I had done in preparation for my book, most people in the United States, when they're asked what is the most important right they have in this country, it's the right to free speech. That is very important to people, extremely important. And I think that is very important to me as well. I think people should have the right to be able to speak and say what they want, though I don't think you should shout down people that might have different views. And we should let people express themselves, assuming they're not inciting riots or doing hate kinds of related things. But I do think the right to freedom of speech and the right to freedom of religion is very important in our country.
How do you get people to really listen, to open up and say, we are not going to be stuck in our stance. We want to listen to others and embrace others, even when they have different views?
Theory behind a democracy that we have, a representative democracy, is that there's an informed citizenry. Now, we have not done a wonderful job informing the citizenry in some cases. We don't teach civics or history very much anymore. And you find an appalling lack of knowledge of how our government works by many people in our country. So if there was one thing I would do, I would try to educate more people about civics and education and educate them about civics and history. But also, I would want to make sure people can learn how to read better. As you may have heard me say before, 14% of the people in this country are functionally illiterate. They can't read past the fourth grade level. If you're functionally illiterate, you have a high chance of being in our juvenile delinquency system or in our federal prison system, and you also don't have a very good chance of earning a good income. So I think we've got to educate people better, make our schools better, but also begin to make certain that people understand what the government is all about and know more about our history.
And let's tie that back into the final question of this radio interview, which is, what is the CEO's role in doing that?
The CEO has to be the leader. If you are feeling that you're not really equipped to be a leader, don't be the CEO. There's nothing wrong with not being the CEO of a company. Many people are not CEOs, and they have quite nice lives. But if you want to be a CEO, you have to provide leadership. You have to say, how can I get people to follow me? You have to show people where you're going, and you have to show them how you're going to get there. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be an effective CEO. But I think three skills that I think are very important in communicating as a CEO are, one, learning how to communicate orally. So when you make a speech, you do it in a way that people feel they've heard something that's important to follow. Second, learning how to write well. Learning how to communicate by written form is also very important. Learning how to express yourself in written forms, particularly in an age when so many people are reading so many things over the Internet, is very important. And third, as I said earlier, the most important way to lead and the best way to lead is leading by example. You say you're going to do something, you want others to do it. Do it yourself. You say it's important to do this or that, do it yourself. Show people by your example. That's the best way to lead.
On that note, thank you, David. A pleasure having you again on the CEO show.
My pleasure.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.